Hello and welcome back to Britpop History, the podcast where we are reliving the Britpop years in real time, 30 years later. Welcome to April 1993.
He's a 20th century boy, with his hands on the rails, trying not to be sick again, and holding on for tomorrow.
The big moment of the month in terms of the growth of Britpop wasn't the release of a single, an album, or even a gig. It was a magazine. The front cover of the April 1993 edition of Select magazine, to be exact. We'll be talking about that as well as some other big singles released this month. But first off, as always, let's look at what was happening in the news. On April the 3rd, the 147th Grand National was declared void after 30 of 39 runners carried on racing despite a false start. Bookmakers were forced to refund an estimated £75 million in bets. On April 17th, two Los Angeles police officers were convicted in federal court of violating Rodney King's civil rights and sentenced to prison, while two others were acquitted. On April 25th, Russia elected Boris Yeltsin president of the Russian Federation. And on April the 4th, WrestleMania 9 took place at Caesar's Palace, where Yokozuna beat Bret Hart for the WWF heavyweight title.
Bret Hart's turned up and gone for it! He's taken the one for it, big man! Hulk Hogan to the ring!
Ding.
The crowd wanted to go for it, but now Fuji reaching back into his kimono there, and it's got more than sold or whatever, all in the eyes of Yokozuna! Hogan knocks Fuji down! Hogan looked close down!
In the UK box office, Mel Gibson's time travel tearjerker Forever Young hit number one for 2 weeks. It was written by a young writer by the name of Jeffrey Abrams. He would change his name to JJ and go on to create the TV show Lost and direct films in the mega franchises Star Trek, Mission Impossible and Star Wars. Also releasing at the end of the month and going on to spend 2 weeks at number one was the period drama Summersby with Richard Gere and Jodie Foster.
You tell me who you are, I'm gonna burn this place down. You've known all along, haven't you? Why don't you take him into your house, into your bed?
John Robert Summersby, we have a warrant for your arrest for the murder of Mr. Charles Conklin.
If you tell them who you are, then they'll have to let you go.
You could win your life, sir.
I'm a name. I don't think I have a life.
You are not Jack Summersby, so why do you keep going on pretending that you are?
How do you know I'm not?
I know because...
How do you know?
I know because I never loved him the way that I love you.
Richard Gere, Jodie Foster, Summersby. She knew everything about him but the truth.
For some reason, I remember this trailer really clearly. I'm not sure if it was on a VHS I had, but that "You are not my husband, Jack Summersby" stuck with me to this day, even though I never saw the film. Anyway, let's look at the UK singles chart, where the Bluebells' Young at Heart remained at number one throughout the whole of April. There were other big hits, though, including a number of tracks in a wave of songs that hit the charts with a poppy version of reggae or dancehall. Snow's Informer, Shaggy's O Carolina and Shabba Ranks Mr. Loverman were all top 10 hits in April. Plus, later in the year, Bitty McLean would hit number 2 with It Keeps Raining and Chakademus and Pliers would end up having 3 top 10 hits in 1993.
Come on strong, Mr. Loverman. You know it, Mr. Loverman.
darling, that is my favorite habit. And when me lay down, you know me not run from it. Them can me miss a lover, but they can me miss a lover.
Now, as I said, we're here to talk about Select magazine, and just to give some background, the music press still played an extremely important role in the UK music industry. Pre-internet, the ways to find out about new bands were in the weeklies, NME and Melody Maker. Or if you preferred the monthly glossies with their pull-out posters, then for me as a teenager at least, Select was the publication of choice, with more focus on young, up-and-coming indie bands, whereas the likes of Q and Vox would tend to focus on older bands. For example, Q in April 1993 had Rod Stewart on the cover, while Vox had Morrissey. But as we said, over at Select magazine, it was a far younger generation of bands taking the focus. This cover has gone down as legendary. If we have a look at it, two-thirds is taken up by Union Flag, with Brett Anderson superimposed over the top, against his knowledge, by the way, posing in his classic heroin chic style, one hand behind the head, back arched and bare midriff exposed. He wears a black leather shirt, and across it is written the famous phrase, "Yanks go home." Beneath that we have Suede, St. Etienne, Denim, Pulp, The Auteurs and The Battle for Britain. The corresponding article written by Stuart McConey starts with the following. "Enough is enough. Yanks, go home and take your miserable grunge wear and your self-obsessed slacker bands with you. You're already twice as cheesy as baggyism, and at least baggy was British. We don't want plaid. We want crimpoline, glamour, wit and irony. We want people who never say dude or sidewalk or can I get a beer. If 1992 was the American year, overweight, overrated and over here, then it's time to bring on the home guard. These, Kurt, are the boys who will stop your little game. Suede, St. Etienne, Pulp, Denim and The Auteurs. Bands with pride." Over the page, Select salutes the new Best of British. Cud named the ultimate crimplinist soundtrack, and we save the Union Jack from the Nazis.
Who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think we're on the run? We are the boys who will stop your little game. We are the boys who will make you think again. 'Cause who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think old England's done?
Yes, this was accompanied by an illustration by Michael Gillette riffing on the Dad's Army intro sequence, and the bands mentioned were all featured. That last line but from Stuart McConey there about saving the Union Jack from Nazis was pertinent, as at the time the Union flag was very much associated with the far-right movement, and Morrissey had courted significant criticism for draping himself in a Union flag while supporting Madness in August the previous year. It was huge news, and the NME devoted its front cover and five inside pages, some 6,000 words, to the question of whether he'd gone too far. Even in the Select article, they were clearly aware of this, and so one of the questions posed to all the bands was regarding the Union Jack and Morrissey's actions.
I've never intended to be controversial, but it's very easy to be controversial in pop music because nobody ever is.
I remember him telling me, like, "Oh, this song, you won't like the title." I said, "What is it?" And he went, "It's called The National Front Disco." I was like, "Oh my God, you're going to get us killed."
Caused the biggest uproar of his career. One music paper compiled a dossier of Morrissey's comments over the years and accused him of racism. He never responded.
They've kept on at that thing, like, well, if he doesn't defend himself, then he must be. Why fucking should he? You know, why should he? We all know for a fact he's not. Because if he was, the fucking news of the world would have uncovered it first. Forget the fucking NME.
A couple of years on, and Oasis would bring the Union Jack even more into the mainstream, as Noel would famously play his Union Jack guitar. Going back to the article, interestingly, while all the bands mentioned were definitely trailblazers at the time for a new British sound, They were all very different, and it's only really Suede and Pulp that have gone on to be significant players in what would be deemed Britpop. Noticeable in their absence in this article is Blur, who you would have thought would have fitted right in at the time, especially having come back with their British Image number one look for the upcoming Modern Life is Rubbish album, eschewing the Clint Boone bowl cut and baggy t-shirt of the leisure period. Now it was all Fred Perry's and DM's. April actually saw the release of the first single from that album, with 1992's Pop Scene not being included, For Tomorrow. Blur had famously presented the Modern Life is Rubbish album to their record company, only to be told there weren't any singles on it. Damon duly went away and wrote the epic Chemical World, plus this, For Tomorrow. For Tomorrow is a great single in the tradition of great British singles. A crisp arrangement with Graham's off-kilter, discordant guitar, galloping strings drive it along, and Damon tells a tale of a 20th century boy trying not to be sick again and holding on for tomorrow. The la-la-las of the chorus tell us everything by telling us nothing. The final, almost spoken word section then gives a more down-to-earth, blow-by-blow account, including making tea, an important staple to mention tea in any Britpop single. We get a nice little nod to the upcoming album title, and then one more final impassioned holding on for tomorrow, and we're out. Did Blur ever better this as a single? I'm not so sure. Other indie hits of the month included Lemonheads, with a title track from their album It's a Shame About Ray. Yes, they were American, but with that jangly sound and even Dando's huge love of British music and culture, they're certainly honorary Britpoppers. Some late 80s and early 90s dance influence acts were back with singles. Jesus Jones with The Right Decision, Prodigy with Wind It Up, and New Order with Regret. We recently did an episode over on the Oasis podcast where me and a few patrons chose our favourite song each year of the 1990s. For 1993, Regret by New Order was my choice. The interplay between the instruments with Hookie's signature bass as powerful as ever are truly stunning. But what really sticks out here is the guitar. Huge chords punctuate the song, driving you from verse to chorus beautifully. Save it for another day. It's the school lights and the kids have run away. I would like a place I could call my own. Have a conversation on the telephone. Wake up every day, that would be a start. I would not complain with my wounded heart. I was upset, you see. Jimmy Goodwin and twin brothers Andy and Jez Williams had a big hit with Ain't No Love, Ain't No Use under the name Sub Sub, with Melanie Williams on guest vocals. They released an album, Full Fathom 5, in September 1994, but after a fire destroyed their recording studio, they would go on to form the more indie-oriented Doves in 1996. They would go on to be one of the most influential bands of the post-Britpop era. And has there ever been a stranger transition from Sub Sub to Doves? There were also hits for The Fall with Why Are People Grudgeful, the Trash Can Sinatras with Hay Fever, and the Lemon Trees with Child of Love. PJ Harvey had come onto the scene in 1992 with single Sheila Na Gig, making the chart just before we started tracking things over here on Britpop History in February 1992. However, 50 Foot Queenie, the first single to come from the upcoming Rid of Me album, got to 27 in the charts and was the biggest UK hit of hers until 1998's A Perfect Day Elise. The sound draws on blues, goth and grunge, with PJ Harvey's aggressive and challenging vocal performance at the fore. Well, that will do it for this month. I look forward to seeing you again for May 1993 as we head up to King Tut's in Glasgow for one of the most controversial and important gigs of all time. Plus, Blur's Modern Life is Rubbish album hits the charts. After over a year of doing this, it really feels like we're getting moving next month. May 1993, possibly the key moment in the birth of Britpop. We'll see you next time to talk all about it.